Michael, we're here on the case of BB&C Partnership versus Edelweiss Condominium, and you may proceed.
Your Honor, good morning. My name is Victor Morales. With me today is Adam Foster. We're with the firm of McElroy, Deutsch, Mulvaney & Carpenter, and we represent BB&C Partnership in this case. Your Honors, my client, BB&C Partnership, did everything required under 3841-108 to acquire the central title to parking space 21 at the Edelweiss condominiums under the color of title statute. It took a warranty deed from the then-present owner in 1976. The deed adequately and unambiguously describes its property, a parking space number 21. There are no ambiguities. There's nothing internally inconsistent within the deed itself.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Could you just move the podium up a little bit, talk a little louder? There's a toggle switch. There you go.
It works.
Thank you.
Thank you. The deed was recorded in 1976. BB&C paid taxes on this property for 25 years and parked there every day for over 20 years. The Condominium Association, the appellee in this case, assessed maintenance fees against BB&C since 1981. And in the record, there is a notation of a meeting of the of Edelweiss in which they acknowledged the deed and even indicated that they were going to send someone over to the clerk and recorder's office to check out the legality of the deed. And for almost 25 years, Edelweiss did nothing to contest my client's ownership of the property. So why did my client lose? What makes this case so different? According to the Court of Appeals, what makes this case different is that we're talking about condominium property. We believe that in its opinion, the Court of Appeals has created an artificial exception to the color of title statute and has somehow exempted condominium property from the reach of the color of title adverse possession statute. And what we believe the Court of Appeals has done is hold as a matter of law, a third party can never possess color of title to a property, any kind of property, to the extent that somehow in the bowels of the chain of title, there is a what is in existence here, not a covenant that runs with the land, but a restraint on alienation. The property can be transferred, but it can only be transferred to a set, an exclusive universe of people.
Mr. Morales, I'm having a little trouble with your argument. I guess maybe it's just the statement of it seems broad to me in terms of this condominium exception. But I just want to make sure I understand how you're understanding the Court of Appeals decision. To the extent that they could be accused of doing that, it seems to me it's because they're tying the deed to the declarations and basically saying, you know, what can be conveyed is limited. Because the conveyor to BB&C, in the chain there, the original conveyance is without the ability to convey the warranty deed. So you are then saying, well, if they limit it like that to the declaration, then that's a condominium exception. Is that where you get that argument?
What I'm saying is that the Court of Appeals is so narrowly interpreting what color of title is and saying, look, BB&C, you should have known that your deed transferred property that was not capable of being transferred, and all you had to do was look at the condominium declaration in which it defines who can own a parking space.
So you're saying, in effect, that's a condominium exception because color of title by the Court of Appeals would be limited to what can actually be conveyed as the person who is purchasing understands it, given the deed together with the declaration.
I think you're getting there, Your Honor. The color of title statute presumes that there is something wrong with your title. It assumes that what you got isn't necessarily what's in the deed, that there's something wrong with it. The test, as enunciated by this court, is whether a casual observer would take a look at the deed and realize that what he got was absolutely ineffective.
You don't agree here that the color of title should include, in terms of this casual observer of the warranty of the deed, should that not include the declarations with the condominium as well? Because the deed is, I mean, it's an integral part of the deed, is it not?
I don't think there's any problem with someone adversely possessing condominium property being somehow tied to the condominium declarations. I think Justice Bernard in his dissent put his finger on the problem, and he took a look at this exception, as you call it, and said, look, this is not a garden variety condominium covenant or a homeowners association covenant that you know, particularly me as a Highlands Ranch resident, we're so familiar with, you know, that you have to paint your house a certain color, that your plants have to be in a certain place. He took a look at this and said, no, that this is something different. That this is a flat-out restraint on alienation. And I'm not, and it's against public policy to enforce that, because it's something other than BBC taking the parking space and being subject to the rules of the condominium association that say, you know, he's got to clean it, he's got to clean up his oil stains, he's got to keep his stripes just so. Well, Mr. Justice Bernard said, no, that this is not a declaration that runs with the land that would limit an outsider. What it is a flat-out restriction on who can own it, and that's different, because if you would start enforcing private agreements that way, and in this case it's a condominium declaration, but when you think about it, it could be a partnership agreement, or as was the case in the O'Reilly Balkwill case, a will. In the Balkwill case, this court in 1956 said, look, the transferee could have looked into the chain of title and realized that the persons who transferred the property to him were heirs under a will and didn't really have the ability to do that. They didn't take under the will what was given to him. But that doesn't mean that can't be color of title.
The declaration is ambiguous, right?
You know, I don't believe it is ambiguous.
Why not?
The declaration in and of itself is fine, and the declaration itself complies with the statute, especially Section 105 of the Condominium Ownership Statute, which says declarations can carve out common elements and can identify certain common elements that can be independently transferred. There's nothing wrong with the declaration itself. Where we get into the problem is what happens when you have a condominium declaration that restricts the ability of third parties to own independently transferable parking spaces. What happens when that declaration collides with the color of title statute? And what the Court of Appeals, in our view, has done is create an exception that swallows the entire rule. What the Court of Appeals appears to say is that you have to take legal title, and that you are charged with each and every defect, constructive knowledge of each and every defect in the chain of title. And to the extent that defeats your ability to hold legal title, you lose, and you can never hold color of title. And that's simply not what the law has been for over 100 years in Colorado. There's nothing special about this property. Issue two, as presented in our brief, took exception to the Court of Appeals decision to the extent it has carved out an exception to condominium common elements for purposes of the color of title statute. And we believe that's true. We gave a hypothetical in the briefing materials. You know, suppose Mr. Foster owns a piece of property that's subdivided into two sections. On one section is a condominium complex, the other section is vacant land. He deeds me the vacant land, but he gets the legal description messed up. And in addition to the vacant land, I get 10 feet of common area lawn, if you will, of the condominium property. if you take the Court of Appeals decision to its logical conclusion, where it says it's a common element, and the declaration says it's a common element, you can't possibly take color of title to that. I can't get color of title to my 10-foot strip, even though I pay taxes on it, I possess it, and I do everything required of me under the statute. I think it just goes too far, and it doesn't really have to. Again, 3833105 says a declaration can carve out common elements that can be transferred to anyone. There's nothing wrong with the declaration in isolation. The way it has been applied to the color of title statute by the Court of Appeals, we believe, is simply inappropriate and inconsistent with Colorado law.
Is there somewhat of an estoppel argument in your presentation to us here that the Condominium Association recognized this color of title as good and treated these people as if they were entitled, as if they had gotten the lot from a developer, the parking lot?
It's in our view, it's tough for the association to argue that it knew about the deed as late or as early as 1981 and probably earlier than that, and to assess BB&C maintenance fees associated with the parking space, and then 25 years later deny color of title argument. Color of title cuts both ways. Construction note.
Well, were they on notice of this conveyance?
I'm sorry?
Were they on notice of this conveyance?
It was of record with the clerk and recorder since 1976. Yes.
No, but I mean when they keep assessing it. They know that this is an outside company. It's not an owner of the condominium. I mean, there are facts that show that this is somebody other than the normal owner of the condominium property.
We agree with that.
Okay. And so, I mean, do we take that into account that... I mean, without disturbing our law on what color of title is.
I think you can certainly use estoppel as a factor.
Did you raise it?
I believe we did in the materials. And if not expressly, we certainly raised the fact that for 25 years, the association was on notice of the deed, assess maintenance fees against BBC, and certainly and talked and walked. Like BBC was an owner in fee simple of the parking space and only raised the issue way after the 18-year statute of limitations under the adverse possession statute when BBC tried to sell the property itself.
Well, let me ask you one more question. I mean, I don't think this is totally a wild question either. Let's assume that the condominium goes into something else. You know, this is very valuable property up there. I mean, are you asserting on your behalf of your client that this is a fee simple and a little piece of land underneath this parking space? What if it becomes an additional ski lift or a high-rise hotel? What kind of interest would your client have under that circumstance?
I agree with Mr. Justice Bernard. This is a fee simple estate, and his approach is correct. Mr. Justice Bernard wasn't concerned with what it was called in the declaration. The Court of Appeals got hung up on that, we believe. Mr. Justice Bernard took a look at this and said, I don't care what the declaration calls it. What does it do? And this particular parking space was capable of being independently transferred apart from condominium ownership.
I think you missed the import of my question. Okay. Does it reduce itself to an identification on a legal description of a certain parcel of ground that survives in perpetuity regardless of the future use of this property?
That is our position, and that's why we filed the case, yes, sir.
Okay. Right.
And isn't that precisely what makes condominium law different? I mean, that's a problem. When you use the example of common property that's grounds outside on the border, so I forget what you said, but a two-foot strip of land may have been adversely, I mean, that's a really different situation. You are now talking about, contrary to declarations, there are circumstances under which a deed that cannot convey title together with, you know, may convey color of title and separate a building with a limited lifespan into severable pieces of property that people own in fee simple absolute, notwithstanding the condominium declarations. Why isn't that a problem?
It's not a problem because the declaration says that can happen.
No, it says parking space. But we're talking about parking spaces. We're not talking about feet titled to land, are we?
It is certainly treated that way under the declarations. It is, Mr. Justice Bernard was right, that this acts, walks, talks like a fee simple estate. And if the entity that deeded it to my client was the declarant, I'm not here. Because according to the Court of Appeals, that's the difference.
But it's a parking space normally to serve the tenants of the building, of course. The people that conveyed this weren't the developers.
And that's the wonderful part about real property, Your Honor. If you own it, you own it. And if someone wants to buy it for purposes of development, they have to pay you for it. And that's certainly consistent with what my client is asking for here. I see I'm out of time. Thank you for your attention.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Wendy Weigler, registration number 28419. I'm with the law firm of Lansky, Weigler, and Porter, and I'm here on behalf of the respondent, the Edelweiss Condominium Association, located in Vail, Colorado. The petitioner, BB&C, is urging this court to adopt Judge Bernard's dissent and reverse the Court of Appeals decision. However, and with all due respect to Judge Bernard, his analysis is flawed in this case and should not be adopted by this court. The dissent is based on what I have come to think of as the fiction of the 10 spaces. Under Judge Bernard's theory, there were 10 parking spaces in Edelweiss that never became common elements because the developer had the right to sell those parking spaces to anyone, including non-condominium unit owners. The problem with the theory, and why I call it a fiction, is that there is nothing in the original declaration or the map or the record in this case that identifies those 10 spaces. We know that there are 20 residential units in the Edelweiss condominiums and 30 parking spaces. Judge Bernard's argument relies on the assumption that one space was assigned to each unit and there were 10 left over. However, the record shows that some units were assigned one space and some were assigned two spaces. The number of parking spaces that were not common elements, according to Judge Bernard, is undefined in the declaration or the map. So is it 10 spaces or some other number? Decades have passed since the developer finished this project and has long since moved on. Under Judge Bernard's theory, does the developer still own these 10 spaces or however many number of spaces that we don't know which ones they are?
Well, counsel, can I stop you there? I appreciate you saying this is an undefined number of spaces, but can you zero in on, I mean, didn't the developer have the right to convey the spaces?
Right. What the declaration said about the parking spaces was that there was a limitation that each of the 20 units had to have a pertinent to it at least one parking space. So each unit had to have one limited common element parking space that always went with that unit when the unit was sold. Other units could be purchased, other parking spaces could be purchased from the developer, and any parking spaces that were not assigned or conveyed, it doesn't say beyond the 20 appurtenant, it said any that were not assigned or conveyed to the unit owners shall be owned by the declarant, who was the developer, who had the right to sell or lease them to persons other than unit owners.
So, and it's undisputed that the parking place we're talking about here descended from a developer conveyance, correct? I mean,
no.
No, okay.
No, well, the developer did convey parking space 21 to an owner. So the owner who originally an owner, Edward Lana, purchased a unit that came with two spaces. So that's one of the examples, not just the one apartment. He purchased his unit with two parking spaces. About 6 months after he did that, he purchased a third parking space. And our contention is that all three, there's no way to distinguish, nor there should there be any reason to distinguish the parking spaces originally conveyed with the unit and the one conveyed 3 months later, I mean 6 months later, to a unit owner. The declaration doesn't make a distinction, and the Court of Appeals pointed that out in its decision.
Well, they had to be parking someplace. I mean, isn't this really a very theoretical argument? Obviously, you said you can park here and you can buy two more spots and you can park there.
Right.
And my understanding of the description was is that it was very specific, maybe by parking number or by some kind of a land description. What was it specifically?
Right. It was the parking spaces had numbers.
So he knew that he was buying parking spot number four.
Right.
So why does it matter whether it was 20 or 30 or one of two or one of three? It was parking lot number four. Parking spot number four.
My point is that the declaration identifies all of the parking spaces as common elements, and they stayed common elements. I think what the declaration did was leave open the possibility that at the end of the day, perhaps when the developer was done selling all of the units, the developer could have held on to parking spaces and sold them. But to do that, the developer would have had to record some type of amendment changing those parking spaces from common elements owned in common by all unit owners to an actual parking unit that would be capable of being conveyed as an independent estate.
Which brings me to a question about the declarations, which I presume are in the record. They must have a way of assessing responsibilities or financial matters and among the unit owners, as well as the whole structure of the association. Do they take into account as well the possible parking space owners who are not unit owners? And if not, then how did the association manage to make assessments to this parking space?
Well, the BB&C, way back years ago after the project was developed, BB&C was the property manager for this association. And the association, as you know, is made up of a board. The board changes from year to year. So at one point in the 80s, it became apparent that the board realized that BB&C had some type of deed or was claiming ownership to parking space 21. But the minutes of the meeting referenced by counsel indicate that the board at that time questioned the legality of it and believed that BB&C had purchased parking space 21 directly from the developer. It wasn't until BB&C wanted to sell parking space 21 outside of the condo that this became an issue, and they looked at the title and determined that no, it actually was not a separate unit that was sold to BB&C by the developer. So yes, Justice Martinez, the association became aware that a non-owner was using the parking space, which is fine. All owners have the ability to lease their parking spaces to other people, to allow non-owners to use them. And there was nothing wrong, and never has been anything wrong with BB&C using the parking space. The problem is whether BB&C had the ability to actually sell that parking space as an independent estate.
I understand that. Let me back up just a moment. Are there any parking spaces, not this one, I understand your answer to this one, but are there any parking spaces that were conveyed to non-unit owners by the developer?
I do not believe there were.
Are there any provisions in the declarations for non-unit owners of parking spaces and how they would relate to the rest of the condominium?
No, but under the declaration taken as a whole and under the Colorado, the Condominium Ownership Act followed by the Common Interest Ownership Act, those people would be treated as owners of a unit. There's another condo association up in Vail, and they have residential unit owners, commercial unit owners, and parking space unit owners or garage unit owners. And those people are all treated as owners with certain rights and responsibilities. But in this case, there is nothing like that because no parking space units were created here.
Now, if one were created, what would be necessary in order to recognize that owner's responsibilities and rights? Would that be covered with the subsequent statutory changes, or would it necessitate changes in the declarations?
It would necessitate changes in the declaration because the declarations say that the parking spaces are owned in common by all of the owners, so the owners would have to vote and actually amend the declaration so that the property records would be clear that a parking space is a unit and is not a common element.
So my final question was, how were the assessments made then against BBC? How were they determined?
At some point, the then management company made a determination of how much a share of parking lot expenses, I suppose they could looked at all 30, divided
so
it by 30.
So that would be without a basis, since there's nothing in the declarations and declarations haven't been changed.
Right, there's no formula or anything in the declaration that would guide that. We know it happened, but we don't know anything more, nor can we look to the declaration for that answer.
Well, counsel, just following up on that, why isn't that basically the functional equivalent of recognizing a parking space unit? By assessing dues based on a parking space ownership, why isn't that the functional basic amendment to your declarations?
Because that's something that the association did. The association does not own that parking space. The owners own the parking space as tenants in common, and that's why under both the old statute and the new one and the declaration, there are very specific provisions that would have to be followed to have a vote and an amendment, and it's not something that you can just agree to or waive. It's statutory, and it's required because you're taking property away from the 20 owners. So it's not something that, in a common interest community that's not a condominium, the association actually owns the common elements and has a deed to the common elements. But in a condominium, the association is just the group that manages, you know, oversees the owners, but the owners are the ones who have the actual ownership interest in the common elements.
Before you move on, can you then help me understand why you couldn't adversely possess that? I mean, adverse possession just doesn't apply. Can you move to that part of your argument?
Yes. Well, first of all, I don't believe that the Court of Appeals made a conclusion that says common elements cannot be adversely possessed. The Court of Appeals analyzed it by looking at the deed and saying the deed contains an exception that made the deed subject to all of those restrictive covenants in the declaration.
Right, but I understand that, but the parking space owner argues that's what adverse possession is all about. You don't have all the everything you're supposed to have. In fact, you've been adversely possessing. So help me understand your response to that argument.
I think that if there was a deed to the parking space that did not make it subject to the declaration, I think there's a possibility that a common element could be adversely possessed in a condominium.
But why isn't the subject to the declaration, why is that the key? I mean, why can't that be adversely possessed?
Because it's an exception. That deed never gave color of title. That deed, there's a reason why the statute says to the extent and according to the purport of the paper title. And you have to look at the words in the deed, and that is all the person got. So BB&C never got anything more than something that was subject to the conditions in the declaration. And that follows Colorado law. That's the Kelly versus Sinclair case back from 1954. It's in the nature of an exception that never conveyed certain property to a person via the deed. So it's not a defect, as they've been arguing. It's an exception that the effect of which is to not give color of title at all.
Well, what do you say going beyond there? Then you conceded that adverse possession might lie in some place, but what you get is what the title that the person had. I mean, if you can adversely possess. Well, so what about this proposition that's being advocated here, that it's actually a piece of ground in fee simple that is owned in perpetuity regardless, that's what's been possessed here? Isn't there something curious about that?
There is, and I think in that case there wouldn't be color of title. It would just be a claim.
Well, here I'm talking about the adverse possession law itself.
Right.
You can only possess what your predecessor had, right? You can't transform it into something larger than that.
Absolutely.
So what did these owners have, this couple that sold the parking space?
They had common ownership with all of the other owners. They had an interest in that parking space in common with all of the owners.
Okay, not a particular plot of ground within the condominium.
Right. Exactly.
Which is what they're advocating for.
Exactly.
Well, but they had more than that, didn't they? They also had an exclusive use right, did they not?
Oh, right. Absolutely. That, yeah, that
comes. To park a vehicle in there or something.
I right.
mean, erect a shed
the
on it.
Exclusion of all other owners. Thank you.
I see no further questions, so I thank Council for your arguments. Case closed.